Jean-Luc, welcome. Thank you for appearing on Arcadia's 17 Questions. Let's begin. Jean-Luc, how did you first meet Henry Lincoln?
I met Henry here in Rennes Le Château about 10 years ago. And he was doing a film. And I was then living in the property of Saunière, and as you know, I had a guest house in there. People could sleep in the rooms, in the bedrooms of the Béranger Saunière, and that's why I met Henry, because he came over. And the funny thing is that we did get on straight away, but he's a very easygoing person, and very nice and very open. But we've remained very close friends since, and we tied up our relationship since those last 10 years.
How has your book been received in France, in Rennes Le Château, and by the villagers in particular?
It's been received very well. I'm amazed. If you knew the letters I get and the mails I get, people are absolutely ecstatic about it. They love it. And I'm really amazed, because you know it was an old dream. I always wanted to write a book and be published, you know, like many people. And I got the chance, thanks to Rennes Le Château. The book was published, but I had sold 500 copies, I would have been happy. And in fact, it by French scale, is quite a success, because after a year, it's nearly reaching 10,000 copies already, which is by French standards is very good. And the reaction is excellent. Many people say we read it at once, you know, which is a very good sign. They like it because it has lots of photographs, very nice pictures. They like it because it's easy to read, it's comfortable to read. It's not... It's unpretentious too, and I think they like that. They like the distance I keep with the story and the facts.
Would you be so kind as to recall the story about the village elder who attended Sunday school taught by Marie, Sonny's helper?
Yeah, that's one of the funny things that come out from time to time, and the few ones confirmed it, that Mary. Of course, yes, she's too, after the death of Béranger, she used to teach catechism, Sunday school. And once she has, after an hour of class, once she had finished, she used to close the book, look at them and say, my poor kids, if you only knew. What did she mean? We'll never know, but it's quite incredible.
So what was it like living in Saunière's home?
Not very pleasant. Not very pleasant, to be honest. I never felt at ease in this house. I liked the park. I like this part of the property where I am now. The house itself, I always felt it like very hostile. Let me tell you something. I had, while I was living in this house, I had the worst nightmares I ever had in my life. And they always were related with the devil and possessions and things like this. And I used to wake up, you know, shaking, sweating, and relieved to realize that it was only a dream. Amazing.
Have they stopped now that you've moved?
Yeah, totally.
And you live nearby?
Well, I live nearby, down the hill, you know, 10 minutes away from here. But I never liked the house very much. I liked the fact of being there and having the privilege of being there. I could feel sometimes the presence of the priest very close. But I never enjoyed it as a house, and especially as a family house. It's never been designed for that.
Do you feel that Rennes Le Château has its own energy, for lack of a better word? And if so, how would you describe it?
Yes, it certainly does. It has. It's a place which is very special. It has a lot. You can feel a lot of energy over here, and I have the feeling that it's kind of booster, this place. You know, if you come over here with something bad in you, it will increase it. If you come in the contrary with good intention, it also increases them. That place has been immensely beneficial to me. On the other hand, I've come through a very hard time, and I really had to fight to be able to remain here. It's at the same time, it's like this place wants me, The other thing I have, this place wants me, but some people don't want me to be here. And they're trying everything to get me out. And it's been going on, and it is still at this moment going on.
Jean-Luc, tell us about your theories on Rennes-le-Château and the Habsburgs. How do you think the Habsburgs could have been involved in the mystery?
Well, I explained all that in my first book, and it's only a theory. Let's be prudent. You know, I don't pretend I know the truth, and this is a definite truth, etc., etc., which is how most of books on Rennes-le-Château starts. Most of book, even now, whoever writes a book on Rennes-le-Château, not everybody, but most of the time, say all the other books are rubbish, and this is the true. You know, the definite truth. They think it's a good commercial attitude, and it's totally wrong, because in fact most of the books who start like it don't sell very well. That's the point. But I worked out a theory which, let's be honest, I don't believe it more than anything else, really. But at least it makes sense. It makes sense, and once people read that book, once I've explained my theory to them, they have the feeling that, well, yes, it might have happened like that. It might have happened like that. Okay, but again, I don't pretend it has happened like that. Let's be very, very prudent. And my theory is that Béranger Saunière's fortune doesn't come from a huge treasure that he found. He found a treasure, but quite reasonable one, not anything like the treasure of the Temple of Solomon or something like this, or the treasure of the Templars, whatever treasure he could have found. No, that I don't believe. I think most of his money came from funds, from money which has been paid to find something. He has been asked to find something which had been hidden here for centuries. He found it. He handled it to those who asked him to find it, and they paid him back. And all along his life he was paid, and I think, by the Habsburg family, because every time I search, every time I find them again around the corner. Okay. He had a bank account in Budapest, the capital of the Habsburg. When he needed money, he used to travel and go away for a week and come back with the cash. He runs out of money when the First World War starts. Of course, if his money is in Budapest, no, it's behind the enemy lines, he can't go and get it. All that always take us back to the Habsburg. Now, if I'm right, what is it the Habsburg wanted to find from here? What was hidden? Probably documents. Probably documents. What were there? That's the main question, and I can't really answer that question. All I can suggest is that because the Habsburg were the protectors of Rome and the protectors of the Catholic religion, it might have been something which represented a danger for the Catholic religion. But I don't go as far as explaining that it was the marriage certificate of Christ and Maria Magdalena or whatever. You know, people like Dan Brown and with much more style, Henry Lincoln before him, explained all that and explained that theory. I don't go that far. It could be that. It could be something else. But definitely, it must have been something of the highest importance, because the Habsburg were the most... The Emperor of Austria represented the highest power in the world at the time. If he was interested in something which was hidden over here, it certainly wasn't a laundry bill. It was something very important. So I'm absolutely convinced that Béranger Saunière has been paid to find something. Now, how did they know? I explain all that in my book. It takes quite a while to explain. But within the French royal family and within the imperial family of Austria, they knew that something had been hidden here, simply because the preceptor, the tutor of the Comte de Chambord, the pretendant to the throne of France, was the nephew of the Marquise d'Opoule de Blanchefort, the last heiress of the castle of Rennes-le-Château. And we know that she handled the document of the archives of the family to the priest of the village at the time. And it is probably those archives which were still hiding here, which they tried to find. That's what they knew.
Do you believe that Saunière was part of a tradition of priests who guarded a secret? Or was he the only one who knew it?
I think so. I think so, and I think some paid it by their lives. You know? We know that Jelis was a very close friend of Sonia, and we know that he was murdered. Boudet was his other closest friend. The three of them pretty shared the secret, and Boudet, the death of Boudet is very suspect. He looks like he's been poisoned. All the priests after them, like Father de Coma, 40 years before Sonia, might have known something. Why could we think of that? Because all these people, de Coma, Sonia, always leave evidences behind them. They had something to hide, they had a secret, but at the same time they leave traces. And those traces and those evidences always bring us back to the same track. They always bring us back to the dualism, which was a fundamentalism of the Qatar religion, and they bring us back to Maria Magdalena. Whatever Sonia left in his church and his property always brings us back to those two points. So obviously he's trying to tell us something around that. The thing is that people interpret, and there are so many interpretations as there are people interested in that story, which also explains the success of this place. But yes, definitely there were also priests, and there might have been a secret shared between some priests from a long time over here. When you look carefully, you find funny things in the churches of the area. A lot of money was spent, millions of gold were spent on the churches of this part of France in the 17th century, suddenly. We wonder why. Evidences like Sonier leaves, there are others in other churches. Just to give you an example, if you go to the church in Mirepoix, one of the stained glass windows, which shows the famous scene of Maria Magdalena drying the feet of Christ with her hair, it's not Maria Magdalena drying the feet of Christ, but it's St. John. And she's standing behind Christ, and she's anointing him on his head. You know, and that dates back to the 14th century. Since I've been interested in that story, I've been looking at things with a different eye, more closely, and I've realized that many representations of Maria Magdalena, probably, principally statues, show her pregnant. It's kind of one out of five, you know, it's amazing. I never noticed that before. I only notice it now because I've become close to that story. So yes, I think there have been a parallel story known from some priest going through centuries, which has been kept. And maybe Béranger Saunière took off the lid and covered the secret, and definitely he knew about it. You know something, after he found whatever he was asked to find, he was not the same person. He changed dramatically from one day to another. He was rich, that's for sure, but he didn't enjoy his fortune. He was frightened. He used to live in a closed house. You know, we know that two of his friends, closest friends, were murdered. He started to drink. He didn't mix anymore with the people in the village. He was a different man. It really gives the impression, and I can't work that out because I've been really following him day after day, and I could see his writing changing, his attitude changing. He's not the same person, and he's wearing a secret which is far too heavy for a single man. That's for sure. I've tried, in that book, I've tried to follow and to transcribe the psychology of Béranger Saunière more than anything. And honestly, sometimes I feel I've been very, very close to that man. Maybe the fact of living in his house helped a bit too, you know, and having his papers and all his belongings around me did help. Many things I wrote in that book were pure speculation. And it's only once the book was written that some readers brought me the proofs of what I only wrote just like this, you see.
Jean-Luc, what is your view on the pentagonal geometry discovered by Henry Lincoln?
I have no personal explanation. I'm just fascinated because you just can't deny it. I mean, the man takes his map and draws his geometric figures and circles and whatever, and you can check it, and there it is. Now, what is it? Why? Some people say you could do the same thing everywhere. It's not quite true. By chance, sometimes you can work. Okay, you can always work a geometrical figure, but when all the points always relate to churches or standing stones, and when the common measure in between them is the imperial mile, then you have something really special. I think Henry has uncovered something enormous that the the official world scientists don't want to accept at the moment because they haven't found it. That's the usual thing. It's probably wrong to be right too early. And sometimes, you know, especially for the last couple of years, Henry can be very kind of very bitter, very sad. He's a man looking back on his life. He feels a huge, an enormous responsibility because he set up the fire and he can't control it. He never tried to control it, but nobody can control it now. You know, it's enormous. What is happening over here is enormous. It's a worldwide story. And he feels terribly, terribly responsible. And at the same time, I have the feeling that he knows that the time is short. And will he have the time to prove he was right and to explain exactly what it was? I have the feeling that he might be a bit bitter because he thinks he's going to leave without having finished his work.
So at the end of the day, what percentage of the Rennes-le-Château legend do you believe is factually grounded? I mean, are we talking 20%, 40%, 60% more?
To be honest, and I think that is an awful lot already, I would say 20%.
Right.
You know, once you clean out all the mist which has been adding, yes, 20%. 20% on a story that we cannot explain and which brought such an extraordinary adventure, it's already quite a lot.